I came here when I was about 1 year old from, you know, not directly from Cambodia. Our family had to journey to Thailand and then on from Thailand to the Philippines. And then from the Philippines, I believe we passed through Germany, Egypt, and England as well before landing in Boston, Massachusetts in the fall of 1981. So that's kind of in a nutshell in terms of our journey and how we got here. And we got here because of the war in our country. And so for those who are not familiar, you know, after the Vietnam War, it's a direct effect on the countries within Southeast Asia. So you got the American bombings that led to the rise of the Khmer Rouge in Cambodia. And because of that, there was a civil war in the country. And my father was actually a soldier in the opposing army. And so he was wanted, therefore our family was wanted. And so we had to escape. Growing up in America, I think in the 80s, it's very different from how I think this generation has grown up during this age and time, just because there was less understanding during my days. It was more so, who are you? What are you? What's Cambodian? And as a young girl growing up, it was hard to explain what that, you know, what being Cambodian was. It's not like your parents tell you every day, well, someone asks you, this is what you say. You kind of tell them, okay, I'm Cambodian, but that's about it. I'm Asian. I don't know much, you know, growing up. And so trying to find that identity and figuring out, you know, where our place is here in America, in our history, and then formulating that. And I think that was the toughest thing, because I feel like as a 1.5 generation, those who came here at a young age, we had to be the ones to sort of fend off people. Also gathering kind of like this explanation of what it is to be Cambodian American and kind of passing that off to the next generation for them to have a better understanding or a better grasp of who they are, if that makes sense, you know. So shortly after, my parents had moved to San Francisco, and, you know, we lived in the Tenderloin for a few years before, you know, moving to the Bayview Hunters Point of San Francisco. And I'm not sure if you're familiar with sort of the Bayview Hunters Point area of our city, but it is a predominantly Black neighborhood. And the school I went to literally was 90% Black students. And so I grew up seeing only Black faces and understanding Black cultures and history. I really didn't know much outside of that. It's not like you get Asian American history or anything like that. And it wasn't until high school where we had an ethnic studies class and my teacher was half Black and Japanese. He was like, you're Cambodian. I suggest you go into ethnic studies. And that's exactly what I did when I went to college. So just to learn a little bit more about, you know, the history of Asian Americans here in this country and that, how that correlates or relates to the Cambodian American experience here. So early on, it's changing high school. So I actually left one school to another so I could meet more Cambodian students. And secondly, and also because there was a riot that had happened at my old high school. So I'm like, peace out. So, you know, went to another school. And I realized that when I got to this new school, I wasn't accepted by the other Cambodians. They saw me as someone that was not like them simply because of the way I talk, the way I dress, and where I lived. It took a while to be accepted. And I got accepted eventually because they found out that I knew how to do Cambodian dancing. Because again, as part of my own self-discovery, I actually went to the temple on my own, a couple friends and I, and said, you know, we want to learn Cambodian dance. Like, I feel like learning dance would be part of our culture. And so let's start there. And so starting to, you know, Cambodian dance, going to a school where there's Cambodian students. And then when I got to college, I seeked out other Cambodian kids. And, you know, we formed this group called Cambodian American Voice on Campus, where we help mentor youth from the streets in the Tenderloin. And so we did that for a good 3-4 years. And I'm not sure if you're familiar with a documentary called AKA Don Bonus. It was a very, very popular documentary that won an Emmy Award. And so Don Bonus himself was actually one of the founding members of that Cambodian American Voice. And from there, it kind of made me feel like I have to do more. And that's how I was able to find the Cambodian Community Development Inc. in Oakland, where they were serving Cambodian refugees. And I made it a point to apply and make sure I get into the organization so I can meet more of the community. I knew I had to reach out, seek out, research and do more. And what grew out of that was my love for my culture, being Cambodian, because growing up, like I said, I was kind of confused at one point. It's like, who do I relate to? You know, the closest group that looks similar to me would be like Filipinos, but we don't share much commonalities, you know. But Lao folks here in the city, I was able to bond with because certain words were similar, certain foods were similar. And so I felt very close to the Lao community that I have found here in San Francisco. My best friend is also Laotian, by the way. And she was like the only one in her neighborhood and community. And so we shared something really special. And in discovering who I was, or, you know, what it means to be Cambodian, I think gave me that confidence to continue to do work, continue to be a voice for my community. Being Cambodian comes with perseverance, it comes with struggle, and it comes with resiliency, and also being able to be patient. Coming from a 1.5 generation Cambodian, I would say maybe a little different of what it means to be Cambodian versus an older generation or a younger generation. I feel for me, what it means is, most importantly, I think for my role is a bridge. I'm a bridge that connects the older and the younger generation. Oftentimes there's these communication gaps, cultural gaps, and there's lost in translation when it comes to, you know, the meaning of what it means to be Khmer or growing up Khmer. Older generations might look at things a little different than the younger generation. And how can I be sort of that gap for both the generations? And for me, what it means, like I said, aside from what I just mentioned, perseverance, the struggle, and being patient, is also about someone who understands and know their culture. And I think culture is very important in the Cambodian community, part of our cultural identity. Without culture, without language, it takes away everything. You cannot be Cambodian and not know one or the other, or I mean, if you know both, I think that's great. But I think that's what really defines us, who we are. And that's what defines me in terms of who I am. In learning my identity, it was me seeking out other people, learning my culture. It was me learning how to speak Cambodian in order to be able to understand, this is what my parents meant when they told me this. This is what, you know, my grandma meant when, you know, she told me that. But I wouldn't have known that had I not, like I said, go out, seek, and speak with other people. So there's not really a set term or set sort of phrase to say, hey, this is what makes me Cambodian. It's a multitude of experience that makes me Cambodian and the Cambodian that I am. Also, as a 1.5 generation, I feel that we have gone through so much struggles, more so than you can imagine. And for me, living where I live and growing up the way I grew up, I mean, we were dirt poor. We didn't have anything. So imagine growing up, being bullied for your race, being bullied for how you look, for what you wear. Most kids won't even make it past high school, you know. And a lot of my friends committed suicide, incarcerated. They don't graduate from high school. And it's because of these struggles. They don't even have that opportunity to find out who they are or what it means to be Khmer. So I'm very lucky to be able to sit here and say that. It was something in me that fueled me to say, I think I want to go a little further. And, you know, I want to say I want to credit my parents for kind of planting that seed in my head early on about, you know, we are Khmer, we are proud, we are strong. And just also wanting to mention my mother as well. She is actually an indigenous woman from southern Vietnam, modern day southern Vietnam. It used to be part of the Khmer Kingdom. And so people from that Mekong Delta region are really headstrong, proud of being Khmer, because they've had their land taken away, their identity stripped. And so when she raised us, it was very important that no one takes away that Khmerness from you, regardless of where you are. Yes, our home has now become southern Vietnam, but we are still Khmer. Same here. Our home now is America, but we are still Khmer. So that stuck in my head, you know, and it replays over and over when I'm speaking to people. It's like, I let people know, yeah, I can speak English the way I speak, but I can also speak Khmer very fluently, very well. Yeah, Rajana Threads is my baby. and it's so important to me. I almost feel like it was 20 years or more in the making. And I say that because my love, like I said, my love for Khmer, anything Khmer culture started early on when I was seeking my identity and learning about my culture and my history. And so along with learning culture and history, I also learned about the textiles, you know, throughout Cambodia and, you know, just our cultural clothing and the significance of it, the importance of it and how it was made. You know, it's not, nothing is machine made back then. Everything is hand woven, you know, on looms. And so just learning that already intrigues me. And like I said, because my mom was very Cambodian, you know, she made sure that whenever there was a ceremony like Cambodian New Year or Day of the Dead or anything like that, that we would be in our cultural attire. So what that means is choosing a fabric, drawing out your design and then getting it made. So at an early age, I was allowed to like pick what I want, draw what I want. And I love drawing. And so it came easy. It came naturally to me. And then as I got older, I had like these collections of clothes over time from where, you know, the different ones I wore to events, and I was lending them out to people for different events. It was like, oh my God, there's this event going on. Let's, you know, show up in our cultural outfit. Someone will say, I don't have one. I'm like, I got one, you know, here, borrow it. And so over the 20 years, I've collected more and more pieces, either ones I've designed for myself or ones that I buy just to have so I can dress people, because that's how much I loved it. Pageant contestants, for example, folks that have been part of parades and, you know, whatnot, dancers. And these are all things that I bought with my own money, accumulated over time, and say, hey, I offer this free service because I just love doing it. And I've been doing it for so many years. Dry cleaning, I would pay for it after. I never asked people for a penny, you know, so it's just something that I love to do. And I feel like the first thing that people see you, they don't know you're Cambodian, but if you have on a nice outfit right away, it's like, oh, what is that? You know, it's also a conversation starter. And so I decided that that's something that I think would be kind of the forefront of promoting Cambodian, us, the Cambodian-ness basically, you know, and then it can start from there. So like I said, 10, 20 years in the making. And then also during my recent trip to Cambodia, I had learned that after the country recovered from the war, a lot of the weaving industry is just now starting to recover. And imagine that. The war happened 40 plus years ago and is just now starting to recover. But as they are starting to recover, you have neighboring countries who are making these textile, but it's from machine. So it's not hand woven. And so these machine spun textiles are now saturated in our markets. And because of that, the folks that are trying to revive this ancient old tradition are losing money. So say they take a month or two to weave, it doesn't compete to the machines that's producing 10, 20, however many in a day. And I'm seeing that that's a big issue in our country because a lot of our weavers rely on weaving, rely on these type of projects for income. And if the machines and these neighboring countries are profiting off of our culture, I'm not gonna stand for that. And so I started Rajana Threads with my own money, whatever I had, and it was not much, and I didn't have enough. It was a friend of mine who said, you need to start a GoFundMe to, you know, pay for your trip to go to Cambodia to actually meet these weavers, these weaving villages, these co-ops, these women, learn more about what they do so you can better promote, you know, what you're trying to do. And that's exactly what I did. I went to Cambodia for about, I believe it was like a week and a half or so. I visited a weaving village, kind of learned from beginning to end what they did, the difficulty and, you know, how they earn their income, who's behind these weavers, are they independent, are they part of staff, what is it? So just learning all the different facets of getting an item produced and getting it out to the public, it's a lot of work. And it took a lot of communication. Granted, most of them don't speak English. So here I am trying to speak Khmer, but I speak Khmer, but when you're talking about, you know, garments and textiles, it's a whole nother language. And so that was quite a barrier, but eventually we got through it. And I love learning their stories. Many of them, solely rely on it. You know, the husband might be the ones tending to, say, the cottons, while the wife picks the cotton and then she spins, you know, whatever the deal is. It's sort of a combined effort, and it's a chain of, most of them is a chain of women. And so when you're purchasing items from Rajana Threads, you're benefiting, you know, all the people in the chain. You're not just benefiting me as a small business owner. Purchasing from me allows me to go back and purchase bulk from them, and it allows them income. Otherwise, we would be turning to these machine-made, you know, textiles. And it's important because, one, we're keeping traditions. Two, you know, we're helping with the revival of an ancient tradition. Three, it's part of our cultural heritage. So I can't see why not. And then third, also, it's giving us pride that us Cambodian people have something to be very proud of, not just, you know, the Angkor Wat and monuments. We have this beautiful piece that was highly valued throughout Southeast Asia. And somewhere down the line, I believe the Thai king actually gifted his subjects or whoever with Khmer silk. I mean, that's how prized it was to have another kingdom, you know, gift your items as like a valuable gift. And so if we have something like that, if we know something like that, we need to keep it going. And I think that's what fuels me to, you know, start Rajana Threads. And then secondly, it's threefold. So Rajana Threads, and then secondly, I would, you know, want to be able to educate people about the machine made versus handmade and the process. And then third, I think I mentioned this to you, is being able to bring back the folks here on like a weaving village homestay tour. And I've had conversations with my production partners about it. We're all down, but when the pandemic hit, you know, it's kind of like, we're not sure in terms of the safety of traveling and things like that. So it's been on hold, but I'm kind of like bringing that back up, you know, to see if this is a potential in the next year or two. And I've already have a media group who's interested in following along on this, journey when it does happen, and I would like to see it happen, but I feel like that's the missing piece of the puzzle, is actually for, you know, customers or just, you know, regular people to go back and see, you know, how it's done, and so that way they can value it, you know, put a value to it even more.